South Africa has remarkable potential, but we need to deliver economic growth and job creation, and quickly. So how do we do that? And I was bemoaning the state of South Africa's economy and the outlook for our country, given this tepid growth and the tepid effectiveness of government, to my friend over the weekend. And his terse response was quite pointed. He simply asked me, so what are you doing about it? And my next guests are certainly putting the politics and the macro conditions of this pandemic world that we live in to one side and doing something about it with the launch of the Local Scale-Up Program. It's aimed at accelerating high-impact entrepreneurs in South Africa and catapulting them onto the international stage. It's a partnership between the SASME Fund and Endeavour, which is a global, almost VC-type incubator. We're joined now by Lisa Klein, who helped conceptualize and set up the SASME Fund, which is this private sector-led initiative born out of the CEO initiative, Alison Collier, MD of Endeavour SA, Melvin Lubecha, who's founder of Go One, and Letabo Motsoaledi, who's founder of another exciting startup, Voice. Now, Lisa, while we already know that successful high-impact entrepreneurs are able to unlock economic growth and job creation, there's been much speculation that they can only succeed in a sound or a thriving economic and political environment. Why do you believe that this is actually a myth that needs exploding?
Michael, thanks for that, and thanks for having us. I think it is a myth. You know, the issue is that when an economy is uncertain, when there's political uncertainty, when there are challenges, that is the one time when there are real opportunities. So people who are entrepreneurial, who have got a lot of positive attributes, are able to see where those gaps are and where they can disrupt. So even though the policy and regulatory environment might not be the best, at those times, things like assets are cheaper, right? It's a lot easier to find spaces and nooks and crannies where you're able to exploit. And so this myth around, you know, businesses can only build in a great economy, in fact, isn't true. And we will see that, I think, from two of our other guests here today, Melvin and Letabo, that they're building brilliant businesses at a time of COVID, at a time where the economy is faltering. Mm. And they are able to, through all of that, see the promise, see what the opportunities are, and they're able to exploit those.
And many great, iconic South African businesses, the likes of Investec, Discovery, were built during some of the most politically tumultuous times. I was chatting to Ian Cantor, the founder of Investec. In 1976, we had the Soweto riots. The same with Discovery in that transition to democracy. Alison, Endeavour, firstly, is this global model of what can be achieved to help wrap around and support these high potential scale-up startup type businesses. You've opened offices in South Africa as far back as 2004, but it is a global business, Endeavour, without the U. I think that gives it away. Just tell us a little bit more about Endeavour before we talk about this partnership.
Sure, so Endeavour, you're absolutely right. It was started here in South Africa. The offices were opened in 2004, but the organization globally was started in the late 90s. And Endeavour, it's a global organization. Its headquarters are in New York. It's now present in 38 different markets. And the sole reason for being for Endeavour globally is to support these high impact, high growth entrepreneurs that are scaling to be market leading positions in their local markets or to the big global markets, specifically supporting entrepreneurs from emerging markets. And what's the reason for doing this? The reason for doing this is Endeavour knows that these high growth entrepreneurs are the true drivers of sustainable economic growth in emerging markets. They create the most jobs and they drive the most revenue and they attract an incredible amount of capital because they're offering these very productive solutions that the world needs, the local market needs and the international market needs. And so Endeavour just is, its mandate or its purpose is to drive long-term economic growth through supporting these high impact entrepreneurs. And so with that, I mean, it's incredibly well aligned with what the SASME Fund is looking to deliver and drive in South Africa. So for us, this partnership is a great partnership and looking forward to working with them for many years.
And Lisa, just to bounce back to you, what is the approach to this partnership that isn't just another VC fund that's launching here? What really makes us quite different and unique in the South African landscape?
So I think what is different and unique is firstly, it's not a VC fund, it's not a fund. The SASME fund has invested probably around 1.2 billion in a variety of funds, in 13 different funds, from VC to equity to debt. What this is about is putting in place a network and connecting entrepreneurs to other entrepreneurs, putting in place a network and allowing these brilliant individuals to be able to access other brilliant individuals who've been there, who've done that. One of the most astounding things I think we see with successful entrepreneurs globally, so whether it's Silicon Valley, Bangalore, whether it's in fact Cape Town, is that successful entrepreneurs have this wonderful ability to replicate, to invest in other startups, to give advice, to mentor, part of a community. And that is really what the local scale-up aims to do, is to put in place this amazing community and access to these entrepreneurs to scale. So I think that that is quite different and profound.
It's often referred to as knowledge networks and funding as the key ingredients that entrepreneurs need. Now, there is a lot of capital, to your earlier point, just as an example, $1.3 billion that you've invested already through the various fund approach that you've taken. But it is networks. And Melvin, you're one of these SA Endeavor entrepreneurs, and I think your journey exemplifies what both Lisa and Alison have been talking about. Back in 2014, you co-founded Go One. It's an online learning platform for corporates. You've been listed as a Deloitte Fast 500 World's Fastest Growing Companies, a Disrupt 100 list of the world's most disruptive companies. If you read your investors, it's like a who's who of Silicon Valley tech giants. We've got VCs and incubators, Microsoft, Y Combinator. Really phenomenal story. What was the market gap, firstly, that you spotted ahead of launching back in 2014?
And thank you very much for that, Michael, and very flattering as a starting point. But I think the key thing ultimately as an entrepreneur is, I always believe if you understand the problem better than anybody else, you'll be able to come up with a better solution. And so for us, the clear gap was one where we found that many organizations weren't investing enough in their staff, and they couldn't either afford or have the right tools to do so. And our premise was simple. Why can't someone in South Africa get access to the best-in-class training available in the US, Australia, or even elsewhere across the continent, and vice versa? And so the model was simple. How do we then bring together the best content providers into one ecosystem? So as an organization, as opposed to having 20 training providers, you have one training provider, therefore lowering the barriers to access high-quality learning opportunities.
And in terms of scaling, did you approach this market gap and opportunity with a lens to scale initially? Did you see some potential in the very German kernel of the idea that said to you, right, we can take this global, and so therefore we have to build the scaffold for a global business? How did you approach it initially?
That's interesting. You know, so as an actuary by training, fairly risk averse, but I think when we thought about the opportunity, and I think to have a global impact, because the reality is, learning and development, human capital development, is probably one of the biggest levers you can pull to change someone's economic circumstance. And so for us at the outset, it was about saying, who are the right partners who can take us to that next level? And the reality for us is, especially being young entrepreneurs, we haven't been there and done that. And so the logic was simple. Let's go find partners like an Endeavor who have been there and done that, help other people globally and learn from their experience. And so we're very intentional upfront to find partners who had been there and done that. And to your point earlier, you know, almost expand our knowledge network. And I think definitely, you know, having spent a lot of time in Silicon Valley, we have an office there, meeting some of the tech giants through the Endeavor Network has helped us think through what is the next hurdle we may not see in front of us.
And in terms of the relationship, the network, the sitting down with other entrepreneurs who've been there, done that, maybe got 30, 40 years experience under the belt, how much value did you derive from that in the establishment of Go One?
Definitely a lot. And I think, you know, early on, and as a young entrepreneur, I think everyone wants to keep, you know, their ideas to themselves. They want to keep their products to themselves. What I found, particularly, and I think communities like Endeavor as an example, and some others I'm a part of, I think the ability to be, let's say, vulnerable and open allows you to get the best answers to your problems. And so I found those kind of reinforcing communities where you realize whether you are a $1 million company or $100 million company, that you are dealing with the same things. And I think that's been highly valuable, particularly early on in our journey, when we're making key decisions that may have made or broken our business at that point in time.
And that is certainly where you need that that wise counsel for you know, the old bull and the young bull to come together, sitting atop the grassy knoll before they attack that opportunity down in the valley below. Letabo, you're the founder of Voice. I hope I've got the pronunciation correct there. V-O-Y-C. It's a local scale-up, but you're now based in the Netherlands because you're taking this opportunity global, and you really see an opportunity here to marry AI to call centers. Where did your journey begin?
Thanks for that, Michael. Yes, it's pronounced VOICE, standing for voice of your customer. We did start in South Africa around 2018, and the problem we were solving is nowhere close to where we are, what we're solving today. We started off as an agency trying to analyze or automatically analyze interviews. So user interviews, we were like, it takes too long to manually do, let's analyze interviews. And at that point, we realized we were building a tech startup. And so we looked for mentorship and advice within the South African ecosystem. And because we couldn't find those individuals or we didn't have access to them, we're like, let's join an accelerator. We'll meet other mentors that will, you know, advise us so that we don't make the mistakes, as Melvin says. So we joined Techstars in Berlin in 2018. We moved our company then. We discovered that the problem we were solving, one, was not user interviews. It was call centers, not being able to manually assess all the complaints and all the calls that go through the system. And secondly, that the problem was not just in South Africa, but it was a global problem. But being from South Africa, we've actually got a very strong financial services industry. Our banks and our insurers are really top class and world class. So it was the perfect environment to learn. So we came back to South Africa and we started working with the likes of Telesure, experimenting with the likes of Discovery. We now work with Momentum and MyWay Life and those companies. And we pretty much learned how to turn this AI software that analyzes conversations to help automate these quality assurance workflows. And when we felt like we had it right, we were like, right, where else can we take it in the world where the problem exists? And so we had our eyes set out on the UK market. We moved to Amsterdam last year. And the reason for doing that is also because of the cost of labor. So our software effectively, if you have a team of quality assurers, and you need to assess those calls, it's really expensive in those larger markets. So our software is perfectly suited so that you can't actually hire all those people, which is why we look to expand earlier than most companies would look to expand, particularly at our stage, because the market opportunity and the pain points are much larger in these more developed markets.
Very interesting, Letabo, and I think your story ably demonstrates some of the significant advantages that we have as an emerging market. Yes, we get bogged down in Eskom and the low growth scenario, but we do have a very strong financial services and services sector. We've got bright talent such as yourself and Melvin and a host of others looking to solve for problems, and then you can start marrying the two together and look at that low cost base as well to then springboard into other markets. Just before we go to the break, how challenging have you found it breaking into new markets where very often we'll find, you know, the incumbents are there, you're now coming in at the back of the queue, you don't have the networks per se. How challenging have you found it?
I think what was required from our perspective is a real good, strong understanding of who we are as a company, what we have to offer, and who our audience is. There were definitely incumbents in the space, some large listed companies that all the financial services use. And we realized that our advantage was being small and being nimble. If you enter any insurer and any bank, the systems that they use are super archaic. They're really old. And in fact, the people themselves don't know how to use it. So we were like, look, AI is new. It's a new concept, but let's not complicate it with like really complex software. We're really easy to use, really easy to buy, and really secure. And that we found is a message that the broader audience was not speaking about at all. The large incumbents aren't trying to be easy to use. They're actually trying to be complicated, which is strange. And so that's helped us in this market out. The fact that we're, you know, we built a really secure and our goal, despite COVID, was always to acquire customers online, which means we really had to build secure and easy software for easy access anywhere in the world. And this market, interestingly enough, if I can share, we didn't anticipate to get any Dutch-based customers. We were solely focused on the UK, and in the past couple of months have got so much interest from the Dutch market that we decided, well, let's just give it a shot. All we have to do is swap a couple of APIs, swap a couple of pieces in our system, and we're perfectly suited for this market as well. So it's been an interesting roller coaster where we didn't expect, we anticipated a lot more friction being outsiders, but we learned that just providing really good technology that solves a problem, right, really doesn't matter where you're from.
Alison, you've got lots of experience in establishing value-creating partnerships in corporates, SAB Miller, Unilever. You took an iced tea brand, Boss, from Cape Town into Europe, Amsterdam and Paris. The challenge is always, how do you successfully access and service new markets from South Africa with limited resources, given that competitors are generally fairly well entrenched in those local markets? How do you overcome that?
No, I mean, great question. And it is also something that I think takes a huge amount of work and diligence. And the most important piece in expanding into a new market is really understanding what the market dynamics are of that particular market, who the players are in that market, and exactly what the levers are and what the gaps are and how your product or your solution can then better satisfy and meet the customer's needs. So you really need to have a very intimate understanding of the local landscape in whichever jurisdiction you're expanding to. And that's typically where, I mean, definitely where we saw as Boss something that we needed to know when we were expanding to Europe. But also it's a common issue. It doesn't matter whether you're a global multinational or you're a startup. Mm. That's exactly what you need to solve long before you make your first move in that market. And so how do you acquire that knowledge without having that individual who's on your team that's known and worked in that market for 20 or 30 years, knows and understands all the players, and also has got a really clear view of the direction that the market's moving to? And so that's where, like what you heard from Melvin and Letabo early on today, you really need to learn from people that have gone before you, and you need to learn from the best. So you need to learn from the individuals who are at the top of their industry in that particular market, because they know and understand the direction of that market, they understand and know the players, and they can help you with the advice on how you enter that market. And then I want to say the trusted network is really important. And so you need to be, I want to say it helps enormously to get that introduction from someone who's part of a trusted network to the right individual. And then you as the entrepreneur, you need to then stand up and perform and deliver when you're given that opportunity in the new market. But that access to the right individual, whether it's a customer or whether it's a potential investor or one of the suppliers in that market, that will really make or break your success in landing in that new market is essential. And so, I mean, just coming back to your question earlier, is like what value does Endeavor look to deliver and support the entrepreneurs with? It's exactly that type of work. So it's really connecting these entrepreneurs with the particular experienced business leaders or entrepreneurs who've successfully been there and done it, or investors who have got intimate knowledge of that specific market and in that niche or the vertical where the entrepreneur is participating, to be able to assist and guide them on how to go about entering in that market, and then opening the door for them, introducing them to them, giving a warm introduction to the right individual. And when it comes from someone who's senior with expertise, then the introduction is heard and the meeting is taken. And then it's up to us as entrepreneurs. We've got to deliver in that meeting. But that's that advantage, it makes a huge difference. And it cuts out months and months or years of time. And cash burn is costly. So everything that you can do to accelerate your revenue growth helps.
And Melvin, I see you smiling away at that particular point as well. And it's often when I chat to VCs in particular about the value that they've got, investee companies here, from an investment by a VC, is that it's opened an access to networks, potential clients, potential business partners that otherwise wouldn't have been there. And it could lead to a huge offtake agreement, something that takes the business into a different direction. Has this been your experience in terms of the access to the kinds of networks that an Endeavor has opened up for you at Go One?
No, I think definitely so, and it's the key reason for smiling. I think one, startup entrepreneurs, you want to solve for funding, but the best form of funding your business is by securing customers. And so I think if you put that front of mind, I always ask myself with my investors, you can ask for an introduction, but are you ready for that introduction? And I think in our journey, definitely being able to not only lever our current clients as referrals, but even our investors and our partners like an Endeavor has been so crucial because what I've discovered in my journey has been like, success comes when opportunity meets preparation. And I think the opportunity can come to your mentorship and your network. But it's like, as an entrepreneur, how are you preparing yourself for that moment? And I found definitely the way in which you come into an organization matters. If you're coming in via the intern versus the CEO, you're going to get a very different audience. And I think it's almost, again, the way in which you're able to also punch above your weight, which I think is very important as a startup entrepreneur, and just being scrappy and hustling and being able to sharpen those spaces.
Melvin, considering your own journey and the fact that entrepreneurs understand other entrepreneurs and this journey that you're on, and that Adrian Gore said he's still on some 30 years in, are you looking to pay it forward now? How much mentoring are you doing in your spare time, if you've got any?
No, I mean, I think I was able to get to where I was because someone made the time to invest in me through mentorship. And so I believe 100% in creating those opportunities for others. And so when and how I can, I'm able to, I wouldn't say mentor, but give advice and ask hard questions and share the school fees paid and the scarf. And so try to get involved in the ecosystem, both as an advisor, as a angel investor, and also sitting on boards of some companies where I'm able to add value. Because ultimately for me, my theory has always been, I want to build businesses whose ideas are so exciting to keep me up at night, but I want to partner with, advise, and invest in businesses and their people who excite me and wish I built myself. And so there's so many great businesses in South Africa that have potential global scale, and it's about, can you be that conduit for them to get there?
That was going to be my next point. Lisa, how many more Melvins Letables do we have out there? Is this a question of now struggling to fill that pipeline to catapult these gazelles into new markets? I mean, that's a terrible analogy. I have pictures of game being catapulted across the border. But you know what I mean here. What is the pipeline looking like for these sorts of businesses?
One of the amazing things is we have a great pipeline. There are lots more Letabos, there are lots more Melbournes out there. In fact, this country is brimming with entrepreneurial talent, with people with great ideas. And I think because there's a lot of adversity here, that's where people do come up with brilliant ideas. That's where people are trying to be disruptive. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to identify how many of those there are out there. There are lots and lots of them. We're going to put them into these programs. This is just year one of the local scale-up. There are many years ahead coming up where we'll be take these businesses who've got brilliant ideas and be able to catapult them globally. Importantly, we also want to give them a bigger customer base. And that's one thing that Melvin mentioned, which I think is key. Don't build national champions. Try and build international champions because international markets are much, much bigger than ours.
Oh, I wish that was an idea that was resonating inside government as well, but I don't want to derail the conversation. What are the next steps, Alison, from here? Very exciting launch this. What are you targeting as this partnership?
So what we're targeting for in this partnership is to deliver similar levels of performance as what we see in the Endeavor Entrepreneurs in South Africa, if not more. So what does that mean? It means strong revenue growth that are delivered through these businesses and high levels of job creation. So just as a steer, for the last 3 years, the Endeavor Entrepreneurs in South Africa have delivered close to 30% annual revenue growth. And then on job creation side, it's around 16%. So with these emerging businesses that are slightly smaller, we'll see, I'm sure, much higher growth rates coming from these businesses. And when teams join the local scale-up program, their revenue is anywhere between 2 million rand a year up to about 50 million rand. And I'm sure by the time that we finish this year, we'll be seeing very exciting growth numbers coming out of these businesses, some of them growing in excess of 50%. And the same thing on job creation and headcount. And what's really heartwarming to see is that, just like in the case of Voice and also with Go One, Letabo and Melvin, is that the bulk of the employees in these businesses that are serving the global markets, these South African entrepreneurs, are employed in South Africa because they're great skills here. There's a cost advantage. You're earning hard currency on your revenues, and you've got soft currency for your tech and dev teams. And that model's working extremely well for a number of the entrepreneurs that we work with. And there's more and more entrepreneurs are entering the space because of this commercial opportunity.
There's almost so much opportunity that we need to have another 3 or 4 local scale-up programs. But it's a great start. Great chatting to all of you. Thank you very much for your time. I think a very exciting development in the ecosystem. It's an oft overused word, but I think this is an example of a true entrepreneurial ecosystem coming together. Lisa Klein, who helped conceptualize and set up the SA SME Fund, who's joined by Alison Collier, who's the MD of Endeavor SA, and Melvin Lubeka, founder of Go One, and Letabo Motsoaledi, founder of Voice, hoping to bust the myth that entrepreneurs can only succeed in a sound or thriving economic and political environment with the launch of the SA SME Scale-Up Fund to catapult gazelles abroad.